Ghibli.
That's a double. I had to get a double in there. And I think, let's just go right into it. This fuck-ass book, Slavery with a Smile.
Well, welcome to the Interracial Dawn Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Malcolm, joined as always.
By a very white guy.
And you're very white indeed. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Radio. Just go to Interracial John, J-A-W-N. Or go to our website, interracialjohn.com. Or on Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Twitter, just at Interracial John.
Yeah, let's just go right into it.
So I'm sure those of you that are listening have heard us talk about on the show and certainly on Twitter and everywhere else about the children's book, A Birthday Cake for George Washington, which I use the hashtag slavery with a smile to discuss the issues that I and many other folks, librarians, book critics, educators, writers had with this book that depicted a slave named Hercules in the house of President George Washington in Philadelphia, and the saga that entailed with it, the outcry of it, and the multiple think pieces, and I did a whole series of two series of tweets. DJ Older just wrote a long piece about it a little while ago, and today the author Ramin Ganeshram did a blog post on Huffington Post called "Why the Banning of a Birthday Cake for George Washington Really Matters," and I'm fucking pissed. I'm so sick.
You should be. It's fucking gross.
I'm so sick of people doing harm to black people, to the black community, to black children, and then allowing any narrative to enter the discussion where they, those that are inflicting the harm, get to play fucking victim. I have never, ever in my life seen someone so desperate to be the victim as this fucking woman. Honestly, I don't even know what to say about it.
And I'll just say this. You should be pissed. I'm not nearly as versed, invested into the book and the discussion. You like you said, you had podcasts. You talked with Ronnie. You talked to a lot of people about this book. You went and fucking bought the goddamn thing. You didn't just make some snap judgment. You actually bought the frigging thing when you still could. You read it. You looked at the pictures. You did the actual work. A simple Google search, found all kinds of shit about George Washington's slave Hercules, about him running away on his goddamn birthday, all sorts of shit. You did all that, and still she comes back with, I guess this is an article. She's on the offensive. It's literally like, I don't want to say it's not true, but like, so you could, I barely know anything, and I read through it. And I was like, no, that's not true. That's not correct. Like, what the fuck? And this is like, and she's got her book on the cover of the article is a book in chains, mm-hmm. right? Like a yeah. nice image.
Yep.
And, you know, using the word banning, right? And like, I don't even get into the whole thing, but like, right away, she calls the community of activists and folks, including you, a lynch mob, mm-hmm. an online lynch mob. Yeah. And then says, well, I use that deliberately. Like, she knows what she's saying.
Yes.
Like, oh, I'm still calling a lynch mob.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a fucking offensive as fuck.
Yeah. She says no one contacted her for her side. First of all, I invited her on the podcast to discuss the book and her thoughts about it. She says that the publisher told her she couldn't do that.
Let's even, she contradicts herself in the same fucking article. She yeah. says multiple times that she was prevented from speaking, that the publisher said, please remain silent, please remain silent, please remain silent, as if she didn't, you know, she wanted to respond to the critique, but she couldn't. The publisher prevented her.
Right.
And then, like, a few sentences later, says, like, well, nobody even asked me my opinion. Nobody called me for my side of the story. Which is it? You weren't allowed to, or nobody fucking contacted you?
Yeah.
Which I already know is untrue. Right. What really happened is, I think Leslie Mack contacted you, and you deleted your Twitter account. Mm-hmm. How about that? Huffington Post. Is that a little subnote in there?
Yeah.
And the whole she goes down to like try to like tear apart the actions around the book. And in doing so, one of her bigger pieces, her bigger claims, is that her race played a role. And I think just for clarification, I would say she is a non-black woman of color. Is that mm-hmm. accurate to say?
I think that's how she would call herself.
Yeah. And I know you, Ronnie, all the people that were on the podcast, nobody fucking talked about her. You didn't even talk about her. You were talking more pointedly about Scholastic. 99.5% of the shit was about fucking Scholastic. Her name didn't even fucking come up, much less her race. And now she's saying that, like, the danger is who gets to decide who can and can't tell certain stories based on their you know, are they black enough kind of thing.
Right.
Is that me?
Who
is
yeah, this? I don't have anything.
Your dollars
open.
Do. Will they turn your night
oh, yeah, I do. That's me. Sorry.
Into a night app?
That's on. I just wanted to pull up. She did release a piece. She wrote a piece 4 weeks ago about her side. It was written by her directly. So to say that nobody asked her That's not true.
She had an opportunity.
She had ample opportunity to say what she had to say. And what she had to say was bullshit. She had to say that, in her opinion, that it is historical record, not her opinion, that shows that enslaved people who received status positions were proud of these positions and made use of the perks of those positions.
Okay, but fucking why? You know what? And just, if you're going to tell that fucking narrative, if you're going to tell that fucking story, you could fucking end it with, you know what? When that shit was stripped from him mm-hmm. at a fucking whim's notice, mm-hmm. he fucking ran away on George Washington's fucking birthday. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
How about fucking that? You know, like, and then the fucking end of the thing. Oh my Jesus! The end of her. So first of all, we didn't even get to this. She starts by throwing the illustrator under a fucking bus.
Oh yeah, she never even met the illustrator. Let me tell you something. She says that in her first response. She says it is what illustrator Vanessa Brantley Newton calls out in her artist note as informing her decision to depict those in a birthday cake for George Washington as happy and prideful people.
Well, you know, this whole, like, well, I didn't have contact with the illustrator. What do you think the illustrator did? The illustrator fucking draw shit out of fucking thin air, or did the illustrator draw things based on your words? And just to throw the illustrator under the bus, and then at the end of the article is like almost like a Patricia fucking Arquette, like, we have to get together as women, all women. I mean, white women. Like, her call to arms, not that, like, she's, again, I'm not talking about race, but her call to arms is really fucked up. It's like, you know, these activists, now that they've got a voice, they've been heard. They got my book banned. Now that you've got a platform, you know, you need to do something with it. And what you need to do is to make sure that illustrators and authors get connected and this doesn't ever happen again. No more misses like this happens again. Literally.
Literally, she closes with saying, it's one thing to understand the volatility of the outrage toward a birthday cake for George Washington. Actually, it's not, because you don't understand it at all. You haven't listened to a goddamn thing any of us have said. You haven't understood the complexity that we're trying to bring up, which is, quite frankly, and at its base level, that you do not get to talk about the life of a slave and ignore slavery. You do not get to do that. And you especially don't get to do that in a book that's meant to inform children about slaves and slavery. And any book that is talking about slaves has the power and intent to inform about slavery.
And that's,
you can't separate those two things.
And I said to we're having this discussion over lunch with a friend of ours, like, in this climate that this book came out, like, don't forget, like, we've talked on this podcast about fucking people going to a plantation, a slave plantation, on a fucking tour, being like, well, they didn't have it that bad, right? It was pretty good. They got fed, right? It was better than being homeless. You know, they treated them pretty good. Like, that's the atmosphere with which this is released, and it's not a fucking in a vacuum, you know? And then this whole article, she's going on the offensive, and it's just total horseshit. It's just total horseshit. Nobody fucking talked about her fucking race. That had nothing to fucking do with it. The whole throwing the illustrator under the bus is unbelievable. Calling the outcry over her book a lynch mob is fucking, I don't call it unthinkable, but like it was so, like, when you read it, and I was like, wait a minute, did she really use the lynch mob? And then her next sentence is, oh yeah, I fucking used it on purpose. I just, oh my God, it's gross.
It's so disgusting. And like I said, it's just a consistent ability for people to harm black folks, no matter their race, and play victim when they're called on their bullshit. It never fucking fails. The minute black folks are harmed, whoever is the person inflicting that harm, they seem to feel that, again, being called a racist is
the real problem. Yeah.
Being called out for your bullshit ass narrative about Hercules the slave is the real problem.
Listen, she says most pressing is the question of whether we can ever reach a place in our society where questions of race can be openly and objectively discussed, especially with our children. Well, you know what? I'd like to reach that place too. And you know what fucking impedes that? Getting to that place? Fucking fragile ass people defending their fuck ass work with fucking bullshit like this. That's an impediment. I'd love to get to that place in society where we could talk about shit. But every time fucking people bring up critiques and talk about shit, you turn around and fucking bludgeon them and call them fucking the lynch mob and that you're the fucking victim. Your fuck ass shit wasn't the problem. The response to your fuck ass shit is the problem. Really? And you want to get to a place where we can talk about it? Who's at fault? Who fuck? Oh, for Christ's sake. I want to get to a place where we can talk about it. And I deleted my Twitter account. We should get to a place where we can talk about it. Ooh, private. Delete. Fuck out of here. Come on.
It's disgusting.
And then the Huffington Post is going to publish this, like, oh, she's the victim, and all these, you know, concerned librarians are talking about the books. Even her fucking thing. She's an award-winning news reporter, cookbook, an author, Columbia University. And those things are all very, very true. But she still wrote this fuck-ass book. And every other fucking article, piece in this thing is a deflection and a deferment. It was 4 years ago, and I don't have control over what ultimately gets done. I wrote something. She says she brought up strenuous concerns in voice and in writing multiple times about the depictions in the book of the slaves and the smiling and this and that. Really, you brought that up, but you cashed that fucking check. You fucking let them publish that book.
You sure did.
You didn't fucking get an injunction. You didn't say fucking, hey, I strenuously refuse to the point that I'm going to hire a lawyer and stop you from publishing this shit. Or how about, I strenuously refuse and I'm going to write a piece to the Huffington Post before it even gets published. That would be something. That'd be real laudable.
Yeah, but that would be brave. That would actually be brave.
That would be actually brave.
And this is the other thing that I have a problem with. She had an earlier interview that she did. I don't even know whatever fuck ass whatever it was that published it. But they also she has this notion that her book was brave and it was so brave of her to publish.
She started a dialogue. She started
didn't start anything. You didn't start a thing, and you're not brave at all. Brave would have been actually writing the story of Hercules in the context of slavery and teaching children through this book that even despite all of these perks that you refer to that he had, that yes, they were at the whim of his owner. You don't mention that in the book. That doesn't come across in the book. That even with those perks, there was always the threat of him being put back on the plantation in field clothing, which happened to Hercules. And then he subsequently ran away from a very difficult place to run away, to freedom, leaving his daughter behind. And the pain of that. No, what you decided to do was write a fuck-ass book about his biggest problem, finding honey to replace sugar in a birthday cake for his owner. Fuck out of here. Fuck out of here. The fuck out of here. You don't get to write that bullshit, get called on it, and then play the victim. You don't get to do all of those things.
But she is, and she's done. And it's in the Huffington Post.
I'm
and
disgusted.
That's the story now. That's the narrative. Oh, you know, poor Ramin. She got attacked by an online lynch mob. And it fits the overall narrative. Like, these Black Lives Matter activists, they just don't... And I forget where it is in her article, but she basically says, like, well, you know, they can't really do that much, so they glommed onto a children's picture book. As if, like, that's some sort of, like, easy, low-hanging fruit and, like, you know, your time should have been done on other things. It's like, give me a fucking break. The whole thing is just so fucking... gross and silly and stupid, and she's not the victim. There wasn't a fucking online lynch mob. To my knowledge, none of the fucking initial and actual complaints from people of color included anything about your race.
Nope.
Ever.
Never.
Never fucking
not
one
once,
goddamn.
Not one thing that I talk about.
Her name didn't come out the fucking listen, in a 2 hour podcast.
And
but
I'll also say something else that pisses me off, and I'm going to mention this. I'm actually going to be going live on Facebook to talk about this. And one of the things I want to mention is that her bullshit ass, this is what you need to do next. It's one thing for this. Her short-sighted and supremacy-laced assumption that those of us that have been fighting to change this narrative in children's literature longer than I've been involved in this fight, that we were satisfied with the pulling of this bullshit ass book. It's your bullshit and wrong ass assumption that we haven't, you know, continued discussing how we're going to hold Scholastic accountable. That we are satisfied with just this one book getting pulled off the shelf. All of those are false assumptions. I have been in consistent contact with all of the women that I have had the pleasure of getting to know under the auspice of Slavery with a Smile. Deb Reese, Ronnie Burren, Edie Campbell, Allison Kreiner Brown. All of us have been meeting on our own time, discussing what we can do, what steps we want to take to move forward. And trust me when I tell you, we have much bigger plans to hold this publisher.
That's the whole.
And that's you and your bullshit ass assumptions. I love how you have your whole narrative you've built around nobody hearing you out, and you haven't listened to a goddamn thing.
I'll say this. This is one thing I think that, like, it took me, and I'm still kind of like identifying this in myself as a white person, but we're real fucking paternalistic when it comes to Black people. You know, like, you talk about like white savior and savior this and that. Like, you get that. That's pretty easy to see. But the paternalistic shit, the just constant and overall assumptive that you didn't think this through, that there was no fucking action, there's no fucking discussion, you just fucking got together as an online lynch mob, like, were mad. And shit got done. I'll read the pieces where she's trying to like pull it together. First, she says it was written 4 years ago, and she thought that parents and educators would be able to, you know, discuss the horror that is slavery. And, you know, given that assumption, despite all the logic, America still does not uniformly accept slavery was an inhumane,
which is why that should have been in the idea that you put forth with writing.
Well, no, but
book.
She thought parents
would
do that.
And if you thought parents and teachers would do that, then you shouldn't be writing children's books. Period.
Well, so listen, the horrifying and benign rewriting of slavery continues. Disturbingly, politicians crowning about the benefits of slavery to the enslaved. Monstrously, some refuse to admit long-term ill effects of enslavement on an entire race of
you
Americans.
Refuse to admit that in your own book.
And because we live in a world where the most heinous racial injustice continues at the hands of the most powerful and untouchable, average people have plenty of rightful frustration and anger. We reach for ways to affect tangible change. Attacking a picture book by accessible people was a way to get heard without being ignored. Now here's where she pulls it. But now that changemakers have the attention of the publishing world, they need to carry on the momentum and demand the retooling of the way children's books are produced, namely the lack of collaboration between writers and illustrators.
That's the problem.
Collaborators and illustrators, that's the issue?
That's the issue?
Fucking,
the fact that she thinks that the problem is just the photos in this book means she hasn't read a single critique of it at all.
In 2012, they did a review of some 3,000 children books. Less than like 4% had people of color.
And
the problem's the depiction of illustrators and writers.
Yeah,
that's the issue.
That's the issue, bitch. That's the issue. And if you really think that's the issue, then you shouldn't be anywhere near children's literature or publishing anything for children, because you have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. None. Zero.
I can't believe she wrote a piece all like, I'm under attack. This is a lynch mob. This is horrible. I can't believe it.
A lynch mob?
I wrote this 4 years ago, and nobody asked my opinion, and I was told I couldn't talk. I was silenced. And now that I can write this, and now that I have this piece out there, I want you to come help me get some empowerment between authors and illustrators. Fuck you. Jiminy crickets. That is just insane. Absolutely fucking bonkers. Literally just like the fucking dumbest shit I've fucking read in a long fucking time. And you should be pissed. I'd be hella pissed.
I'm shitty. I'm real shitty about it.
I don't like to, like, you know, let the podcast sausage out, like how shit's made. But we're not even like supposed to be recording right now. We've got other shit to do.
I was just like,
you know what? Your righteous indignation and rage, because you just read this article like what, an hour and a half ago?
Literally.
I was like, just get on the podcast. Let's record right fucking now.
Because I'm pissed.
However we put this podcast together.
I'm so over this shit. I'm so over people getting to play the victim when they are the ones that inflicting harm on folks. I'm so over any pushback from black people, black women, okay, let's say that.
Yeah.
Being pitched as some sort of, you know, pitchfork induced hysteria. I'm not hysterical. I know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm very well versed, both in your bullshit ass book, which I paid money and bought and is sitting on my iPad right now, first of all. Secondarily, I'm very well versed in what you should have wrote in your book. I'm very well versed in the history of the publishing world, which is where all of my critiques were focused. What my question was not why you wrote this book. My question has always been how your fuck ass book made it through pitch to editing to illustration to marketing to shelf with nobody at Scholastic saying a goddamn thing about it. That has been my problem from day one. It continues to be my problem, and I will continue to fight that fight. The fact that you are trying to make this about you is disgusting.
And am I crazy? But like, didn't the editor and the fucking publisher all defend this shit almost immediately?
Yes.
And then like maybe like 4 days that are like, well, you know what, it doesn't fit our standards.
And according to Scholastic, their change
had nothing to do with your
so-called online lynch mob.
Yeah.
So you better check with them before you start spouting off at the mouth.
It's all just fucking trying to save face and point the finger, and it wasn't me, and this and that. What could just one day, can't somebody be like, you know what, you're right, I wrote it, I didn't mean it to be fucked ass, but it was a pile of shit, and I'm sorry. That's all I gotta say. It shouldn't have been done. Okay, you're right. I'll go back. It's not the end of the fucking world. Like, I'm in a business world. I do things, and some shit fucking works, and a bunch of shit fucking falls totally flat. Like, I hire and pay people, and they write code, and shit gets done, and it's like, wow, that was a fucking total flop, dude. Nobody fucking yells at me. I'm not fucking like, oh, I gotta defend this, and ooh, I gotta fucking make some fuck-ass excuses as to why this shit I tried didn't work. No, I fucking tried. Fucking, it's like, use the baseball analogy. I bat like 250. I'm not great. You know, I'm a career fucking average hitter, but it's good enough to keep a fucking job.
Well,
doesn't have to be perfect.
And I also just feel like there's so much more power in accepting,
yes,
and understanding what, yes, you've done wrong. Imagine this piece that she could have written, just like her book could have been something really, truly special. This piece about the book not being banned, and I really wish HuffPost needs to go back. First of all, this entire piece is complete hate speech, and I can't even believe that they published it. But secondarily, it has lies in its title. This book was not banned.
Yes, incorrect.
This book was pulled by the person who owned it and could decide what to do with it. It wasn't banned. Nobody has banned anything. And I own the book.
Let's just for a second. I really like, I know there are people on my timeline, people I respect and follow. DJ Older's a writer. I have a lot of people that are in the publishing world. But what in the fucking world is so special about something once it's written? I get it that books have been banned at certain points. I get that Hitler burned books. But we're, as a society, pretty comfortable with, like, you know what? Snuff films don't need to be made. You don't need to fucking make that.
Say that.
That's not fucking, you know, let's not make a snuff film. People aren't fucking writing, like, movies that are, like, depicting lynching after lynching after lynching. That's not a fucking movie that needs to be made. Violent fucking, like, horrible, like, rape, assault, fucking sexual, like, battery, child pornography. We don't allow that. That's not allowed to be made. But what is so sacrosanct about a written word? What is so untouchable? And again, I get there's a history. I totally do. I really, really do. But, like, there's shit you can't... Like the Alchemist fucking cookbook and some of these other fucking, like, things on how to make bombs and shit.
And
dude,
once again...
That's not allowed.
None of the push was focused on telling libraries not to carry,
yeah,
the book. It wasn't focused on telling people not to buy the book. It literally was like, why did Scholastic publish this,
yeah,
book?
Yeah.
Why did the supposed most vaulted name in children's literature publish this book?
I honestly would say, I know you're upset, and I'm you know, we're talking about Ramin specifically, but I'll just say to her that, like, in the time, energy, effort, like, all the stuff surrounding this issue that you put in, and it's a lot. Let's not underestimate the hours and the thinking and the conversations and the communications and the podcasts and the things that you've done surrounding this issue. In all of it, I shit you not, if Ramin occupied fucking 2%, I'd be shocked. I'd be fucking shocked. It was about Scholastic. It was about publishing. It was about narratives. It was about all kinds of shit.
And again,
it wasn't about her.
And again, she should go back to Scholastic's own statement with regard to this book. And I'm not saying I agree with it, but if you're going to post your bullshit as Huffington Post, you should probably go back to what the publisher who actually made the decision to pull this book from the shelves had to say about it.
Yeah, and it wasn't banned.
What
the word they used wasn't banned.
What they said was that we believe that without more historical background on the evils of slavery, that this book for younger children can provide the book. The book may give a false impression of the reality of the lives of slaves and therefore should be withdrawn.
And she even in her article says, I assumed parents and teachers would be able to, given the historical context of slavery, have this discussion. So you admit that it wasn't there, and your publisher admits that the lack of that context deems the book not ready for publication.
We do not believe this title meets the standards of appropriate presentation of information to younger children.
Where's the banning in that?
Where's the fucking banning in that? Stop trying to make this seem like somebody was out to get you. That's not what happened.
It's not what has continued to happen.
But I tell you what, I'm coming after your ass now, because this is just disgusting. And you're attacking me.
Listen, they have white people in little fucking humbug towns that fucking go to the little school boards all the fucking time. This poem is racist against white people. This fucking teaching of Peggy McIntosh's Backpack of White Privilege makes white people look like bad.
You don't even
all
have to
the
go
fucking
that
time, dude.
Right now,
all the fucking time.
Right now, Scholastic has each school decides what books can be in its book fair, and plenty of school districts decide they don't want any books that depict gay and lesbian kids. There's a large character named Captain Underpants that is a child but can flash forward to the future. And in the future, he's gay. And school district after school district has pulled these books from their shelves. Is that banning? Just stop. Just stop with the lies. It's not true.
Yeah, when white people are upset about a depiction of white people, it's justified, it's legitimate, fucking congressional fucking this and that. It's racist against white people. You can't do that. But black people have a fucking legitimate fucking critique about a real fucking issue, and you're a fucking lynch mob, and they're a fucking victim, and shame on you, and now that you've got this attention, fucking work for me. The end. The fuck? Seriously, the fuck?
All right, seriously, guys? I mean, really? The fuck, dude? The fuck?
The fuck?
All the fucks.
Dude. Every the fuck. Fuck. I don't have any more fucks to give. I'm out of fucks. Out of them. I'm livid about this. Like, you couldn't just be quiet. And I'm not trying to silence anybody, but that would have at least been better. It would have been more genuine. It would have been more appropriate. If your real goal was to lift up the life of Hercules, this is not the fucking way to do it. What you've done is made this shit about you, and it's disgusting. So all of your lofty ass so-called ideals, fuck out of here with that. It's lies.
Yeah, please.
All right, now that I've gotten that off of my chest, we can move into the rest of the show, starting with feedback. We love feedback.
We do.
And you can leave us feedback a number of ways. Actually, I should mention here that Stitcher has been fucking up. Like, it's been down for days.
Just I know, a bunch of people have been bitching for a while about it.
And, yeah, like, if you go to the app right now, it's, like, down for maintenance. It's been like that for several days. So, an alternative to Stitcher, you can go to RSS Radio. That's where you can find us there. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. You can leave us a review there. If it's 5 stars, we'll read it here on the air. You can also send us an email, interracialjohn@gmail.com. And easiest of all, you can pick up your phone, dial 657-JOHNERS, that's 657-JAWNERS. If it's under 3 minutes and not crazy, we'll play it here on the air and answer whatever questions you have. Shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Eye Who Tips for our general feedback rules. If you're talking about the show on the Twitters, please be sure to use hashtag TheJohn, J-A-W-N. So that you can engage with other people that are talking about it, including us.
All dozens.
All two of you. Now, I do have some emails, actually, now that we're mentioning it. So the first one is from Hiroja Sheeb. What's up, Hiroja?
Hey there.
And it's titled Pizza Chicken. So for those who don't know, we do have a cooking show that we do the first Tuesday of every month. It's called The Cooking John. It's on Periscope, and you can follow us at Interracial John on Periscope or on Twitter or both to engage with us. But it's 7 p.m. the first Tuesday of every month. And Hiroja says to Leslie and Drew, caught the cooking show. You guys are so cute together. Thank you. I just a couple of questions about the salt/anchovies. Is there a substitute to keep the salt intake a little bit lower without altering the recipe too much? Sure, you can use any salt substitute like Mrs. Dash or anything like that. And the anchovy is not a requirement. I just like the flavor of it, and it adds a little salt flavor with a little bit of depth. So I would say use the salt substitute on the chicken, and you can skip the anchovies altogether, and the dish will taste just fine. Any additions?
No, I'm not a huge fan of the anchovy, but it wasn't like overpowering. It wasn't like, oh my God, anchovy. Bleh. It was like, okay, I got it. And I see what you mean by the depth of like flavor to the like the saltiness. Like, it's not just salt. It's like, you know, like brine kind of, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I do it for you. A sacrifice.
Ugh, poor you. Then she also says, I don't know if you have had a chance to read the Fraternal Order of Police data dump, which happened a couple of weeks ago. She says, I'm still personally going through the data. In and of itself, the data is quite a lot. And there are, for the most part, legal contracts. I've made 4 personal observations, depending on your view of union contracts in general. 1, there is a very clear arbitration that is built to protect the officer. A, which is good if you believe in employee protections, or B, bad if you view that is that police officers are not employees in a traditional sense. 2, while it's clear that the starting pay for police officers makes it greatly emphasized to make sure that when hired that police officers receive the starting amount, A, nowhere in any of the contracts of any township, city, big or small, or county establish what the criteria is to be a police officer. So there's no standardization.
Not one?
Not one.
Jesus.
B, which is very different from other types of union contract, which establish the type of criteria a person must meet in order to be hired for a job, and if they have additional skill sets, what they should be paid and what type of jobs they should be considered for. So that would be like, okay, if you have this amount of training, you qualify for CSI. If you have this kind of training,
you're an electrician, tradesman, you're an electric master craftsman, whatever. There's different, I got it.
She says, 3, what type of evaluation or complaints that can be put into a police officer's personnel file, and how the police and how a police officer can have this material removed or not placed in their personal file. And the benefits police officers receive are all over the place, but are still very generous and more than average of the average American worker receives. For example, in a lot of contracts out of New Jersey, when an officer retires for 7 years after the officer health plan, will have the city pay 80% and they only pay 20%, for an example. The only benefit so far I can see for any advocacy groups that are seeking for police accountability is this being of placing complaints, comments, or whatever in a police officer's file, whether or not the actual process is being followed. There should be quite a paper trail when it comes to these types of activities. Keep up the great work. Look forward to your next podcast and the next cooking show, Hiroja Sheep. Thanks, yeah, Hiroja.
I'm not as familiar with the data dump. It sounds like she's really read through.
Yeah, she asked me if I wanted to read it. Honestly, I wish I had the bandwidth, but I don't. Also, it's not my area of expertise. I don't pretend to be a criminal justice expert whatsoever.
Well, and I think that, you know, that's a good distinction, like whether you think it's for employee or against an employee, or you're pro union, against union. Independent of all that, like, I think on some level, some of what the FOP does is like, okay, I fundamentally get it. Like, that's what you would want your union to do. Like you and I had a legal case, and we're like, listen, we got to get a lawyer. And the guy was kind of like a jerk. He's like an attack dog. Like, really? But we're like, I'm kind of glad he was mine, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's sort of like what I think you want in your union on some level. But then when that's superimposed over a layer of like perceived infallibility, like there's the general impunity with which they operate, you know what I mean, like the whole cop culture, the copaganda, where it's like cops can do no wrong. When you approach it, when cops can do no wrong, and then you give them this layer of protection that's just like, you know, unilateral and blind in its support of officers regardless. Like, there's literally been officers that like Holtzclaw, like, he's now serving, it's been upheld, his sentence is done, he's going to serve the rest of his life in jail, 200 some odd years in jail, right?
Right.
But at the very beginning, the union was like, we are behind him 100%, unequivocally, we defend him, he needs his pay, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Like, you know, I'm not saying that they should or shouldn't, but...
Right. And I also think that this is the part that I find very interesting, that in a normal union employee relationship, they're protecting the employee from the corporation, right, the company. And with the police, it seems they're protecting them from the general public.
Yeah, it's true.
And that is a very different dynamic.
Drastically,
and it's why
different.
It should be different, because they should be held to a different standard when it's the public that is expecting them to serve, not a corporation. Very different.
And look at how there's no criteria. A fucking goddamn person that... The chick that cuts my hair here in Grand Rapids, I guarantee you there's more criteria, more licensure, more like insurance and liability coverage that she has to carry for cutting fucking hair. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's a fucking, like, a beautician, esthetician. You get near somebody with wax in their vagina and shit, you got all kinds of fucking, like,
all sorts of shit. Yeah.
And they'll fucking sue you in a heartbeat.
But it's regulatory because of who has those jobs. It's a lot of, like, bullshit that goes into all of those, like,
But why is it
under the guise of the public safety?
Look at how fucking twisted it is. Like, just, like, literally, in what world is it that, like, your job entails carrying a weapon, using that weapon, potentially killing somebody, and we give you less scrutiny?
Right.
What?
It doesn't make any sense.
Like, huh?
It's really, like,
that's
crazy.
That's bizarre. That's fucking crazy.
It's crazy. So, thanks for that, Hiroja, and I'll keep us posted. We'd love to actually, if you want, maybe you can call into the show one day, or we can patch you in. You can give us a little more background on that. The next one is from, let's see, @_kings_hand, and it's directed at me.
That's the King's hand.
Yeah. Hey guys, I just wanted to apologize for a recent Twitter interaction that I had with Leslie that led me to getting blocked.
Oh Jesus. Wait a minute. Oh my God. Hold on. Wait. I'm not ready. Hold on.
She tweeted about a racist tweet regarding Serena. And in the replies, one of my followers who had a locked account replied, and it looked like I was being a jerk. I believe that this was because Leslie couldn't see her reply. I just want to say sorry, and that I didn't mean to come off as a jerk. Sorry, sad face.
That's pretty good. That's right. You know.
Anyways, let me do this.
Are you gonna
go on block you right now while we're talking?
Wait a second.
So let's get into the. So what did I say was the
underscore king
underscore king's
hand? King's underscore hand?
Underscore hand.
This is riveting podcast material right here.
Unblock
it. You know how long it takes for Twitter to unblock shit, too. I've had multiple, like, when I say multiple,
okay,
like...
Okay, here he is. You're unblocked, sir. Unblocked.
So I connect with a bunch of people.
I'll even follow you. I don't be following people, but I'll follow you. How about that? For a while. I'm following you. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that I've had, because I interact with a bunch of different people and I've connected with, like, you know, various individuals that, like, you know, block a bunch of folks, right? You know, mm-hmm. like people that are quick with the black hand. And then they'll see, like, oh, I see you follow, like, you know, insert high profile black person. They blocked me over misunderstanding. Can you talk to them?
I'm people say that shit to me all the time.
Oh, fuck. I'm talking to, you know, like, what dozens.
Happens when that happens to me?
You block them too?
They get blocked.
I'm usually pretty, like,
you can contact me about me. Don't come in my mentions trying to ask me why Feminista Jones blocked you. Like, come on. Stop. Just stop. That's not how that works. That's not how any of this works.
One person, I've never even shared this with you. Somebody came at me asking me to talk to you.
Me?
Yeah. Mm. And I you know, I said a couple of DMs, and I wasn't like rude, but I was like, one, don't do that. Two, it's like, it's never going to work. Three, it's just going to piss the person off more. Four, that's how Twitter works. Five, if they blocked you, it's for a reason. You know, just like, oops, deal with it. Like, yeah. And literally, I've been blocked. I know I've been blocked by individuals for nothing more than my name, Very White Guy. Like, they mm-hmm. see, like, oh, Very White Guy follows you. Block. And, you know, I've had to deal with that. Whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't go like, oh, geez, you know, so-and-so, you blocked me because my name. No, don't do that.
That's funny. Okay.
But it worked.
It does work.
From a social conditioning standpoint, I think that was a very poor move.
He had a good reason, and he pasted the tweet that I couldn't see in question, and he's right. I did assume he was being a jerk, but when I read it in the thread, because his follower is blocked, he was correct.
You know what?
What?
He had receipts.
He had the receipts.
Good on you, King's hand.
All right, we got one more email. This one's from Hannah. Who the subject line is, can I ask? Sure, why not?
You always can. We don't have to answer, but you can ask.
Although, this is auspicious. If I'm out of place, just let me know.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Like, Hannah, I'm just going to say like, that's not quite, like, there's, like, a spectrum of things you could open a paragraph with. And, like, on one end is, I'm not racist, but. And, like, somewhere in between is, like, this may be fucking out of pocket. You know, stop me if this is.
Here we go. On the subject of cultural appropriation, this is going to be good. My son, 4 years old, loves a Finnish white rap artist. 90% of all Finns are white. And we brought him a few CDs and DVDs of this artist. And today I started thinking of whether I'm raising him all wrong. He doesn't speak English, so having him listen or watch U.S. artists, white or black, makes no sense. But should I at some point educate him on where rap comes from? On the one hand, almost all music on Finnish charts for the last 100 years has always been appropriated from somewhere. In the 1950s, all number one hits were Italian songs that had been translated into Finnish and performed by Finns, for example. Is it appropriation when a small cultural niche, 5 million people beside the North Pole, take something like rap, hip-hop, pop, rock, baroque, rococo, and put their own spin on it? There are a few folk music bands that have made it to the hits list, but even their music is heavily influenced by Swedish and Irish and Norwegian or Russian traditions. So I have no idea what would be pure Finnish music and where to find it. Up until now, I've mostly just tried to introduce my son to lots of different music in Finnish, Swedish, English, Filipino, Spanish, and Russian languages, which I personally speak or know some. I love your podcast. It keeps me looking cool to my colleagues at work since you talk of all the TV shows that will be trending in Finland a few months after they've aired in the U.S. Hannah, P.S. I'm a listener from Finland. You can stay at our place if you decide to visit. We do have the Aurora Borealis, and we live 3 hours drive away from the polar circle. Smiley face. Okay.
First of all, Hannah?
Hannah, don't be invited. Yeah,
you do not know what you just did.
That's the first thing. We've traveled all over this globe.
Girl, we're going to take you up on that.
I'll be starting to look at Finland tickets. And not just Northern Lights, specifically going to Finland, because I don't want to go to these other places that have.
And we don't have kids. We can travel.
Yes.
Have dogs, we'll cage, we'll travel.
Yes, that's right. We'll board and travel. That's right. So you might be seeing us sooner than you think, Hannah. But to answer your appropriation question, it's an interesting one, and I certainly don't pretend to be some sort of cultural expert. Do you have any thoughts to start off with? Very white guy.
I mean, my immediate knee jerk is like, I mean, a kid's 4 or 5. I think it's not, you know, like, let the kids with the kid wants with the kid. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
There's only so many things you're going to be able to do with a 4 and 5 year old. And I don't know if that's exactly the, like, age to have the in-depth, nuanced discussion about cultural appropriation.
No.
And especially because you're talking about your your heritage, Finnish, right. And they're all going to be white anyway. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're from, where's Iggy Azalea from? Australia. New Zealand? Yeah. Mm. If you're like from Australia and you're into rap, like, Iggy's kind of it. Like, I don't know, but maybe there's other ones. Well, I shouldn't disparage the Australian rap scene. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're currently Finnish, there's 90 some odd percent white. I don't know how much you're going to do. I did look up Finnish rapper, white rapper, and the only thing came up was a pretty bad fail on World Star Hip Hop of a remix of Biggie.
But. Okay. Well, I'll say this. So there's two things I would say. One is I don't know if your son can be. I don't think, first of all, there's no, like, you're not raising your son.
Yeah, there's no wrong answer.
So that's
the
first thing.
Nothing's
Secondly,
wrong.
I wouldn't say nothing's wrong.
Well, I don't know.
I don't think this is wrong, but I will say that I think it is great that you can start educating him on the origins of rap and kind of like the idea behind hip hop and rap, which is that, you know, people in urban areas here in the United States that were pouring their pain and their true gritty lifestyle and the things that were important to them into their music, which has always been the case throughout history, and that hip hop was a new way of
oral
people doing that.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a great thing to tell him and to show how it progressed. I think you can show him how things went from simple to more complex internal rhyme as he gets older. And so I don't think that it takes away from him loving a Finnish white rap artist. And I also don't think that you explaining those things is a knock on whatever music is out in Finland either. But
yeah.
I think it's great to explain, you know, kind of the origins of things, and that in the country that he happens to live in, it's isolated. And so the access that you guys have to things like that is going to be isolated too.
It is what it is, yeah. And we're going to, a little later on, I think in the music piece, I have Tef Poe did a, I guess, like a response to Macklemore's White Privilege too.
Oh, cool. I haven't heard that. So
cool. In terms of like, you know, rap and white and black and appropriation, sort of, interesting that there's those two pieces you could have almost side by side now.
Sweet.
Macklemore's and then Tef Poe's.
Excellente. Yeah. So that's it for the email. So I'm going to actually close the email program now. I don't know anymore. It takes a lot of manpower on thing. But we wanted to talk about a few other things. So I have a new hair salon, a hairstylist here in Grand Rapids, which I love. She's amazing and she's great and I love going to her salon. It's super close to our house and it's like right in our neighborhood and it's always like a bunch of cool people coming in and out, and she's very connected with the community. She's from here, but she moved to Atlanta for a number of years and then moved back here about 7 years ago. She knows everybody, and I mean everybody. I was talking to well, I won't say her name because maybe she doesn't want me sharing it. But anyways, the woman that founded a Black Lives Matter chapter here in Grand Rapids.
Okay.
Doesn't live here anymore, but she used to go to her to get her hair cut. So I don't know. Anyway, she knows everybody. So it's been great. You know, I've gone there like two or three times.
Your hair looks really,
I love it.
To her credit, it's not only been a good, you've had different styles for different purposes, but it's held up really well for multiple days. And then when you take it out, like just the other one was like, damn, it's good.
She's really she's good job. So anyways, so I'm there last week, right? Yeah. Last week.
Last Friday? Whatever it was. Yeah. A week ago.
Getting my hair done, and I'm sitting under the dryer waiting for my twist out to dry because it's cold. Can't be going out with wet hair in Michigan in February. And in walks this white dude with, I guess he liked to call them dreads.
Speaking of cultural appropriation.
He said dreads, which I hate that word. It would be locks if I was going to call it something, but he called them dreads, his dreads. So I'm sitting there under the dryer, so I can't quite hear everything that's going on, but I see my hairstylist's face as she's like going through this like rat's nest of whatever he was trying to call locks. And all I hear is her saying, "Oh no, this is terrible." Literally, "Oh no, this is terrible." So I start snapping away some pictures. I start posting them on Facebook and stuff because I'm cracking up at this. So she had an older black gentleman in there as well who did have locks, beautiful locks. And she was, you know, giving him, you know, I don't know what they, like retwisting them and like servicing them or whatever. So she was talking with him or whatever. And he's also an old head from the neighborhood here. So we had started a general conversation about a bunch of stuff. I talked about that building we were trying to buy over on Hall Street. And we were talking about the neighborhoods and everything here in Grand Rapids. Here goes, oh boy, talking about he grew up hood.
You texted me that, and I about fell out, dude. Like,
it was like a record scratch in the middle of the salon. The old head turned around and literally gave a, I'm not joking, 15-minute dissertation about the history of gentrification in Grand Rapids. I almost got up and started clapping before I left the room. I was like, yes, thank you. Oh,
man, with the dreads.
Too funny. There's, oh, no. This is terrible.
I'll post it in our comments for you so you can put it for folks. But there was a really good article on Everyday Feminism. This white feminist loved her dreadlocks. Here's why she cut them off.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes through all the various... you know, I wouldn't say like arguments,
right.
But you know, what it meant for her, what it appropriation versus appreciation, you know, a lot of different nuanced pieces. But it's a great article on, I guess, dreadlocks and why we white people just shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Shouldn't do it.
Don't.
Yeah.
Just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. So, oh, let me tweet the King's hand because he just followed me back.
Live on the John. You got unblocked, dude. You did it. You did it. You climbed the mountain.
Right,
you climbed the mountain.
Talk to you soon.
If the DMs start, then I'm going to have to block them, dude.
It goes down in the DMs.
She's in problems.
It goes down in the DMs.
Okay, so anyways. you did a whole podcast about formation, yeah?
I did do a whole podcast about formation. I'm not even going to talk about formation right here because...
No, you could just listen to you.
Everybody just go back and listen
who
to
was
it. Me and
Think
my
pretty
girls.
Smart.
Think Pretty Smart. Miss Smart was on there. Brown and Bella from La Bella Body Care. Ronnie, Dean Burrell, educator. And recently... successfully defended her PhD candidacy last week. Woo woo! Go ahead, Ronnie. Dr. Dean Burren coming up. And Kristen Howard was on. So I literally just grabbed four of my girlfriends and was like, hey, let's get on. Let's talk about this. And it was so good. We had so much fun.
The thing that cracked me up is that, like, many hours later, Red Lobster was like, oh, yeah, Cheddar Bay Biscuits. Cool. And you tweeted that something like, in the time that it took you to compose this tweet, I got four women on different parts of the country together.
I grabbed four women in four different cities, recorded, edited, uploaded, and promoted a podcast in the same time it took you to get that one tweet off. Red Lobster, fail.
You had one job.
All you had to do was that.
You had one job.
Mm. And we were back in Flint this week.
Yep.
Otra vez. I was hosting an organizer meeting with a bunch of local organizers and some national folks that came out to just strategize, talk about next steps, talk about needs, talk about support that they were needing, and talk through some different things. It was really enlightening for me, a pleasure to host.
Agreed.
It, and really tough at the same time. Flint is really tough, and there is a new coalition coming out of this organizing work. It's called Flint Rising. You can follow them on Twitter right now, Flint Rising. And be on the lookout. They're going to be doing some amazing things. They have a huge concert that's going to be coming up in Flint at the end of the month. And lots of folks going to be able to work with them. And it's going to be a great place for people to plug in directly to the people on the ground actually doing work. And I will be personally supporting them in a lot of different ways, but mostly in... really getting some specific narratives and truths that they are trying to dispel, and one that I'm going to be calling Bigger Than Water. So be on the lookout for that from me and from
the
response.
There's a variety of folks that were there, but the two women that came from Detroit, they've been fighting water for a couple of years.
Yes, Monica.
Oh, good Lord. Like, you know, like there's like... I've been kind of just like on the periphery of what you do. Like, I don't really think of myself at all as like, you know, involved, but I've met a lot of people, you know, met like, you know, bunches and bunches of people now. And, you know, I find it not interesting, but every time somebody has some fucked up shit to say about a black woman, like every fucking time there's just like the baddest ass person that just like owns a fucking space in a room and is like, whoa, that person just kicks some serious fucking ass. Black woman. Every fucking time. Every time. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Just, it was pretty awesome. And there's the input they had. Because they're 2 years down.
Yeah, I mean,
they've
really
been fighting this water issue in Detroit.
This for a while.
Privatization for a while now.
And
so
that's why,
some,
you know, the
knowledge.
Campaign that I'll be kind of spearheading and putting together on a couple of different fronts via Ferguson Response is going to be called Bigger Than Water. So be on the lookout for that. Just to connect some dots for folks and really get people to see that while water is the symptom, it's nowhere near the root cause of the problems in Flint. And we need to address some of this root stuff in order to get a handle on things. And at the same time, we need to get people water and the water system fixed there as well. So it's a lot going on, but, you know, as I say, in every community that I have the pleasure of working with, they have the tools, they have the expertise, and they have the knowledge to get all the things that they need. They just need support and, you know, amplification of what they need to get done. So
you're here.
Yeah. And I'm back on the road again this week. Mm. I've been home for a long time, bae.
Have you?
I've been out. I haven't had a trip since Minneapolis in December. It's been a long time.
Okay,
that's a long time.
Yeah. Yay.
Anyways, I am back on the road, so you'll be spearheading the show pretty much at least one of the weeks while I'm gone.
There'll really. Be an interracial meh.
Yeah.
Interracial
meh. Yeah. So, yeah, but I'll be going to New York, seeing my family, and then going to do some work with some wonderful black high school students at my alma mater, which I'm very excited about. We're doing a workshop called Challenging the Institutions Within. So it's
nice.
Be cool.
Yes, yeah,
be cool.
I know you're excited for it.
I'm very excited.
It's a good opportunity for you.
Yeah, it is.
Exciting.
Should be cool.
Should we go to the news?
Let's get into it.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So this actually is a little bit old, but it came floating on my timeline, and somebody had like weird face emojis with this. The lead Forest Hill man died after a vibrator became stuck in his bottom.
Yeah, see, now you mentioned this to me, and I was like, we must talk about this on the show because I need more information.
Yeah, well, you can even tell from the headline bottom that it was British, UK. It was UK, and so like somebody. This person made a comment, and then I wrote back like, oh my God, was it on? Like, we were kind of like joking about it. And then I read it, and I was like, oh, that's actually kind of sad. But a 50-year-old Forest Hill man died after a vibrator became stuck in his bottom, and he was too embarrassed to see a doctor. So that's a little bit sad. He was
that's terrible.
He couldn't remove the sex aid and spent 5 days on the sofa of a Dartmouth Road home that he shared with his elderly mom.
Oh God!
Yeah, so I mocked it, and, like made fun of it. I was like, oh my God! Then it's like almost like
he's too embarrassed. Yeah, to say anything to his mom or like to go to a doctor.
You guys
got to get over this shit, dude.
I was gonna say that I felt like a little bit sad and like embarrassed for him and stuff. But then on the other hand, I'm like,
it's a
5 days,
tale. Like five days.
You knew it was up there. You knew it was up there.
Was it on?
I don't know. It
doesn't say dildo.
No, and it
vibrator.
It went so far up that it perforated his rectum, and it had to be surgically removed post mortem. Yeah.
Oh.
5 days is a long time. Oh. Like
it probably was on.
Your colon has like a there's muscles that you know, like if it's not pushing out, it's gonna like go the other way.
Yeah.
I guess.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah. Poor thing. Oh my gosh. And now there's nobody to even like take care of his mom.
I just
and
like
stuff.
That. That's like
yikes.
I always like. It's like, I would hate to die by fire. I would hate to die by like this. I would hate to die by vibrator up the butt for 5 days. Like,
yeah,
that might
be
the most embarrassing,
bad.
Like,
definitely
mortifying.
Not cool.
Yeah.
Not cool at all to have it happen and deal with.
But 5 days is a long time.
It's so long.
Like,
it's like,
what were you thinking? 5 days?
5 minutes would be too long. Like I'm really like,
he couldn't have been shitting. Like
he was about it.
Incontinent for 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, he must have not been really doing anything. Really.
I mean, like I don't have to deal with the affliction that is constipation. That's not me.
Right.
My system isn't like
that's not
a constipation problem. But like one time I had a back injury and they're like, oh, you can't leave the hospital until you have a bowel movement. And like, all this stuff. Oh my God. I was like, this is the most like
excruciating.
Yeah. And that was barely like a 24-hour period, like 5 days without pooping. Oh my God. No way. I'd go.
Kill me now.
Yeah. I don't know how like. I couldn't do it. I would be at the hospital so quick.
Oh, so quick. Fast.
I haven't shit for 2 days. Nope, hospital. Let's go.
Yeah, definitely.
Instantly.
So you called me onto this thing, and let's see. I think I have a video to play, and it's about resting bitch face, which I know so many people have been talking
someone
about.
Someone with a bitchy face.
There is a video on YouTube. It was on what they called bitchy resting face.
I've got bitchy resting face.
It was a bunch of women that were accused of having disorder that affects all these women. So it was done as a humorous thing, but we actually took the video and images from that and then ran celebrities through. And what we see is that people that have this RBF expression, you see about double the amount of of emotionality expressed, so almost 6%, and most of that is made up in a jump in the level of contempt. The celebrities that we ran through first were Kristen Stewart, Anna Kendrick, and Kanye West. Right. The ones that are quote-unquote known to have it Anna did all Kendrick spike in our software. What we found was that particularly celebrities and people contempt. Who are known to have this look on their face are showing an underlying level of
Kanye,
contempt,
6% contempt
that you don't see in
That's
people who don't have this face.
Wow.
So basically, resting bitching face, bitchy resting face is real.
Darn it.
It took Jen Yu Nelson years to master the vision of directing
Kung Fu
Panda.
Oh my God, it won't stop.
Drawing inspiration
from
whatever comes
her way. It literally
won't
stop.
Commercials are winning.
I can't take
commercials are winning.
Fucking commercials.
So resting bitch face is real, is what basically the science is saying.
Pretty much.
And that the resting bitch face is actually a function of underlying emotional, like you don't have a good poker face. You display a little bit more emotion than the most individuals. And of the emotion you show, you skew towards contempt.
Contempt, right.
I love that they picked Kristen Stewart and Kanye.
That makes sense because they all have, and I love RBF, we can call it now.
They have actually science that's there. It's fact. Resting bitch face.
Resting bitch face, people.
It's real.
Mm-hmm.
It's super real. So did you hear Chipotle has taken the, I guess, unprecedented move of closing all of its locations for 4 hours last Monday for food safety training.
Mm.
Every fucking one. Yeah. Nationwide for 4 hours for a company-wide staff meeting about food safety.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me real comfortable.
Or the opposite. First of all, like being someone who used to manage restaurants, like the
closing, and it was literally 11 to 3. It was like lunch, 11 to 3.
Yeah. Like, I've done like menu rollouts are most often when you have like a closure and a reopening and stuff, like a big change to the menu. And it takes a lot of effort and like a lot of work to do it and coordinate it and have people that are trained in every single location. Fucking A.
You know, buried in here is what they really, this is what they really did. The changes include washing and cutting tomatoes and romaine lettuce and shredding cheeses in a central commissary instead of individual restaurants.
So they're taking over control.
They're taking over
control.
Which
is interesting because that was the whole like thing about Chipotle was that everything in-house. Was made in-house, especially the tomatoes. It was like, I think you could probably go back and look, they had commercials that were like, we don't get our tomatoes from blah, blah, blah. They come in as real tomatoes. We cut them here and they taste better. And that's
and
why you should go to Chipotle.
Side of E. coli.
Look, you know what they need to do? Give it the fuck up. Rebrand as something completely goddamn different in about 6 months because this shit is not going to work.
No. In fact, let's look up their stock. Let's see what's done. Chipotle stock.
Good
over
Lord.
Let's see here. Over a 1 year period. Oh, geez Louise.
How bad is
it? It was in August of 2015. It was trading at 757. It's now down to 480, dude.
Mm-mm.
That's not even, that's like in 6 months, it's lost fucking like 35% of its value. That is really bad.
Wow.
It's still on its 5 year. It's still better than it was in like 2012, you know, like after the like market crash and shit. But yikes. From September of 2015 until like this year, it's down a astronomical amount.
That's crazy.
Yes, so bad.
So those in the New Jersey, Philadelphia area will recognize the name Nifty Fifties for restaurant family and family fun center. They have like mini golf game room type of thing, like a low rent Chuck E. Cheese, kind of, right?
Like it was kind of like for adults, and it was like, it had this like the 50s theme and soda.
Right.
And, but it was like a upscale diner, but the food was always on point.
Their fries was on point.
And the service was real quick. They got people in and out, cash only.
Yep. So,
and it was like, I would say, kind of iconic in Northeast Philadelphia.
Very iconic in
Northeast. Two locations? Three locations?
I think there were three. They have more. I'll go through it. But Anyways, the co-owners of Nifty 50s, a Philadelphia area restaurant chain, will serve some time behind bars for their role in a multi-million dollar tax evasion scheme. On Tuesday, a federal judge sentenced 53-year-old Leo McGlynn of Swarthmore to 36 months in prison. He, along with 75-year-old Robert Matei, pled guilty to conspiracy, tax evasion, and bank fraud. And Matei was sentenced to 15 months in prison on Monday. And their three co-defendants who ran the Nifty 50s eateries engaged in a long-running scam to avoid paying taxes. Investigators say the Nifty 50 owners and employees had a scheme going to keep and hide money when customers paid cash for their meals.
It was cash only. They had an ATM in the front.
According to the indictment, they stashed the cash in personal safes in their own homes and in bank safe deposit boxes. The five conspirators paid themselves in cash, as well as most of the other restaurant employees, which allowed them to avoid paying more than $850,000 in employment taxes from 06 to 2010, according to the indictment. During that same period, they also used the cash to pay suppliers, which allowed those other businesses and people to evade paying taxes as well.
And what's not even saying in this article? So they're serving 36
months. You know
what
that is, though?
They burnt the place down. It was an arson.
They just burnt one of the places.
Yeah, but still, like, it wasn't just like, oh, they're trying to evade taxing. In their tax evasion, they burnt the fucking location down.
They failed to account for more than $15 million in receipts from 06 to 2010, thus evading $2.2 million in federal employment and personal taxes. Aside from McGlynn and Mattai, the three others, Brian Welsh, Joseph Donnelly, and Elena Ruiz, also pled guilty. Donnelly will be sentenced on Wednesday and Ruiz and Welsh on Thursday. And they have locations in Pennsylvania and New Jersey.
They didn't need to do it. The thing was popping. That was such stupid.
That's so Philly, though.
That is so Philly. Cash only. Philly. Yeah, so Philly.
It's like to the guy who gives them their little baskets. Let me Edward Don this shit only. To the side. Absolutely. It's so Philly.
And some of our, in fact, there was another family-owned restaurant that tried to expand and they went out of business. Remember that one, Leslie? And it was the same deal. Cash only. It was like, you know, the grandma ran the kitchen out of like the back of their house. And it only seat like maybe 40 people tops, but it was gold mine. Yeah. Absolute gold mine. Yeah. They ruined it, but cash, and for that same reason. You know they're not paying shit on it.
It's always a stress point.
You know, and that place, like I said, that place was like, when I say busy, like
so busy.
They were open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and they were packed all the fucking goddamn time.
All the time.
The one on Grant by the airport, the one that burnt down.
Yep.
Packed constantly.
It was always busy.
If you had paid your taxes, it would have been, I mean, Jesus, they said they avoided $15 million over not even like a 7-year period. It was easily a $1 million location.
Right.
Easily. That's greedy. Just stupid and greedy, I guess.
That happens. So the Met makes a historic decision to stop using blackface after 124 years.
Wait a minute. 124 years? That's all it took?
Yeah. This season's production of Othello at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City is steering away from the use of blackface, a practice that has been used during the play for 124 years, being that racism is prevalent within the world of theater and fine arts. This is a move that, although long overdue, is a leap in the right direction. Naomi Andre, University of Michigan professor and editor of Blackness and Opera, said that they went to discuss the implications of the Met's use of blackface and said, without really connecting with that history, one really is divorced from the crucial crux of that story. And that although this is a huge step in the right direction, if we divorce the history of race from this play, we lose a great deal in the process. So, you know, it's Othello.
Can't they just cast a black fucking baritone or something?
You'd think that they could.
And there's at least two, right? There's Othello and there, I guess Iago's not. How many black? There's one. You need one black.
In Othello? It's just Othello.
You need one. You can't cast one black singer for the opera. You had to do blackface for 124 years? Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I don't know. Anyway, so that's a good thing. Hopefully other major opera houses will follow suit.
And on the story there, is that Pavarotti in blackface?
No, it's not Pavarotti. It's just one of the leads at the Met that's there. I don't know what his name is, but whatever.
124 years.
Yeah.
I guess like applause for that or something. That took a really long time.
Yeah.
A really long time.
Yeah, long time.
Well, let's hear.
This Week in Hashtags.
That music's so hashtags. Like masculine and aggressive, dude. It's like all fucking like six guitars and drums. Sounds like something's exploding in the background. Fucking sports!
So This Week in Hashtags, I think the only one that we highlighted, which was Being a Black Girl is Lit. Shout out to Awkward Duck herself, who coined the phrase. And she was just tweeting about Formation and just was saying that Being a Black Girl is Lit. So you guys should check that out because it's got some amazing black people and black women actually sharing why Being a Black Girl is so lit. It is pretty fucking lit, I have to say.
You get lit.
I don't get it. I am lit, though.
You are lit?
Yeah. So that was funny. And then the other one I think you were looking to highlight was I'm Not Kidding, Maddie.
That was kind of weird, and I forgot about that. Thank you for the in there. Yeah. So you know the whole like, and I honestly like, people might like hate me for this stance, and like I'm not trying to be all like I don't really care, and I'm like in the middle like waiting like a fair weather fan to see who wins. But like truth be told, I'm gonna vote Democratic regardless in the presidential election. I don't feel very like motivated to vote either Bernie or Hillary in the primary. I just want this shit to be over. Mm-hmm. But like on my timeline, there are like people I care about and follow and like, and they're like really like serious. I'm with hers and white and black, both demographics. And then there's the Bernie folks, and I've got some stans and Bernie bros, or you can call them, like, again, black and white all over the place. And I'm just kind of like bleh, like with the whole shit. But so I guess I think like Hillary sent out a fundraising email. And you know how they personalize that shit?
Sure.
And it had a line that was like a little bit like desperate. And it was basically, I'm not kidding. And then insert your first name. Like I'm asking you to donate a dollar right now. And the email that somebody received, this individual's name was Maddie. And then Maddie like posted a screen cap and put it up on the internet. And then the Bernie stans thought that was like, you know, pathetic and funny, and used it as a means to like kind of like make fun or mock of Hillary. So then they literally got I'm not kidding Maddie trending as a like, I don't know, reversal of like making fun of Hillary for sending out what appeared to be a kind of desperate plea for money, but like as the Bernie's free of not like, asking
Bernie
for money,
is not asking people for money too.
Like. It just was like I guess it seemed to me to show like, and I'm not able to put it in the exact contextual words because I don't deal with the Bernie stands like nearly quite like you and like people like Rod and other folks, like other more prominent black people that like speak out perhaps about like his, not even Bernie, about like his fans like weird kind of behavior. Them making a hashtag of I'm not kidding Maddie is sort of like, I don't know, indicative of that weird behavior. Like that's not something like, I'm not saying Hillary supporters aren't doing that, but I haven't seen it. I haven't seen quite like the hashtag of mockery.
And not just a hashtag of mockery, but the thing about the Bernie folks is like they come in your mentions like these are people that don't follow me.
Oh, they got like a keyword. Like, auto
but it's
something.
Like that's the part that I feel like doesn't, why they don't see how off-putting it is. I'm who knows, I may have been feeling the burn by now had it not been for these assholes. Just saying, because I talk about both candidates. I put stuff up bad and good about each of them, just stuff that I find interesting. But only when I talk about Bernie do I get random douchebags in my mentions that I didn't call for, didn't ask, didn't have any, I don't even follow these people.
Yeah.
Like if I follow you, or even if you follow me, at least I'm like, well, they saw it on their timeline. That's not what it is. It's people that don't follow me, have nothing, I've never heard of them before, jumping in my mentions, telling me how stupid I am for saying whatever I said. Like, why?
And the thing that gets me is it's ineffective and it's irritating. And it's like, can't you see that? Like, and I think a lot of what we're seeing now, like at least in my opinion, Bernie's responses in Minneapolis to the Black Lives Forum, was it that he was invited to?
Yeah, Black Forum
Minneapolis, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, I tend to agree, say that he came off as kind of condescending, a little paternalistic, and you get the same thing for some of his supporters, where it's like, I'm going to tell you what's best for you, and
right.
and or even more subtle, like, I inherently don't think you know what's best, and I know what's best, and I'm going to show you what's best. And it's just sort of, it just never comes off well. That's not a successful strategy.
No, it's
yet it's
not.
Being employed so aggressively.
So aggressively, and it's so like the assumption, even everything he was saying in that thing was just like, you know, let me tell you what's happening with black community, 50% of this, and then spouting off these numbers. And it's like you're in a room full of black people that have invited you there to talk with them about their needs and their issues. And you think they need to be told that youth black unemployment is at 50%? Bitch, they wouldn't have asked you to come if they didn't know all of those things already. They don't need you to educate them. You should have been there to listen to what they had to say and actually came to the table with some things that were concrete that you were going to talk about, how you were going to affect them. How were you going to fix
it? Even the concrete things he says are like he's going to make the United States not the number one in mass incarceration at the end of his first term. That is I don't call it utterly preposterous.
But even in that, even if that was true, how is that to say that that the people that are going to be included in that are the black people?
Touche.
This is my entire problem with everything
that,
you said.
That was certainly vague in that regard.
All the time. Like, you say whatever you want to say, but if you do not have a racial lens that you're viewing shit through, from environmental issues to economic issues to criminal justice, you're not doing that shit right.
Well, hey, and I didn't have it in the notes like bash Bernie or nothing.
I'm not bashing Bernie. I'm just saying, generally speaking.
Stand down.
Fuck y'all. How about that?
Stand down.
Feeling froggy, then leap. Anyways, did you have formation? I wanted to play it for a second.
I don't have that queued up.
Oh, you don't? Okay. Then we can't play that then, can we?
Mike, you got music. You can't play music
I don't think I have it at all.
You don't have title?
I don't have it on my computer.
Neither do I. Why don't you go to the YouTube video?
I'm going to try. Let's see if it'll play for us. Probably be an ad.
There'll be a fuck yeah, it's a commercial. 20 million plays by now. There's definitely a commercial.
Well, she may not allow them, though.
What happened? Bitch, I'm back. I'm popular the man.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. I earned all this money, but they never take the country out me. I got hot sauce in my bag.
Swag.
Ooh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I like that.
I did not come to play with you hoes. I came to slay, bitch. I like cornbread and collard greens, bitch. Oh, yes, you best believe it.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. I earned all this money, but they never take the country I made. I got hot sauce in my bag. I see it, I want it, want it. Sun yellow, want it, want it. I dream it, I work hard, I grind till I own it. Own it. I twirl all my noodles, hit it. What's mine?
Hey, what's mine?
I'm a star.
I'm a star.
Cause I slay. 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 We gon' slay.
All right.
I'm not trying to interrupt it, but you see what's trending and just happened right now?
No, what happened?
Rebel Wilson at the BAFTAs, apparently. Some are saying it's trending a fine line. Others say it's blatantly racist. You want to give it a whirl?
I guess so.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's so great to be here at this really serious event. I have never been invited to the Oscars because, as you know, they are racist. But the BAFTAs have diverse members. And that's what we all want to see in life, isn't it? Diverse members. One day, I hope to return here to win a BAFTA myself. I have already been practicing my transgendered face.
What's this chick's name again?
Rebel Wilson. From like Pitch Perfect.
Actor.
I know you.
Sorry, Idris Elba, you're making me a bit nervous. But I'm just sociologically programmed to want chocolate on Valentine's Day. Mm. five really attractive men have been nominated. And I really look forward to congratulating the winner. Although, I'm looking forward even more to consoling the four losers.
Rebel Wilson. That just started trending.
That's not worth stopping me playing Beyonce, FYI. Anyways, that's the new theme music for our Dope Black Girls segment. And I wanted to start by highlighting Eclipsed on Broadway, which makes history as the first all-black, all-woman Broadway show, opens next month. And it will go down in history as such.
Please it's written- clap.
That's the actual clap. All-black woman, first in history.
Yes, bitches. All-black female cast and creative team was written by Zimbabwean American playwright, actress, and star of The Walking Dead, which comes back on tonight, Denaya Gurria.
Nice.
And tells the story of five women during the Liberian Civil War. Eclipse originally premiered at the Yale Repertory Theater and now with an Academy Award actress understudying for the role of the principal girl. That would be Lupita Nyong'o. She is going to be in the new production of it, and it also is a debut for Lala Anthony, who is one of the co-producers of the show, and it's really exciting. Through the 10,000 Girl campaign, the Eclipse team has a goal of bringing 10,000 girls from the tri-state area to see the show who would not otherwise have the opportunity to experience a Broadway production, and it's pretty fucking sweet and awesome and exciting. And
that's unbelievable.
That.
And you know, yeah. it kind of all female, all black, and then front and back in terms of the production is incredible. And certainly, you know, you're looking at diversity. You're talking about a new test for diversity in Hollywood that I don't quite understand, but you were trying to explain to me, and I don't think I quite get it. But
yeah, so it's called the DuVernay test is what it has been dubbed, and it's a new test that reveals whether Hollywood movies are diverse enough. So you've probably, maybe not you, but people might have heard of the Bechdel test, which is a rubric developed by cartoonist Alison Bechdel to determine whether a movie's female characters are more than just accomplices to a male-driven story. Few movies pass it. So
meaning
it has,
you're not the sidekick, you're not the girlfriend.
Right,
not
so
the
it has like some general questions it asks, like how much, how many conversations between women don't revolve around a man, how many speaking minutes a woman has in a film. So it has a bunch of
so
stuff
like even like
that.
The Second Wives Club wouldn't necessarily.
Nope.
Because it's all about women talking
Correct.
About their relationship
Correct.
To the man.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Even Frozen, I don't think, passed.
Because it centers on the male.
The conversation.
The conversations
specifically between women are about a man.
About men.
Okay. So there's now the DuVernay test, a new set of criteria to judge a film's portrayal of African-American characters for equity and depth. It obviously takes its namesake from Ana DuVernay, but was coined by New York Times film critic Manola Dargis in her film about the Sundance Film Festival couple of weeks ago. And so films that pass the test are those in which African Americans and other minorities have fully realized lives rather than serve as scenery in white stories. She cited the Sundance film Morris from America, a coming of age story about an African American teenager living with his father in Germany, as a prime example of one that meets the criteria. On Twitter on Sunday, the test namesake celebrated the term, writing that she was floored by the suggestion, quote, "What a lovely cinematic idea to embrace. What a thrill to be associated with it. Absolutely wonderful," Queen Ana DuVernay said herself. So I just thought that was really cool and kind of neat. And of course, it would be named after Anna because she's fucking awesome.
Yeah, and what were the same? Do they have the same metrics or rubrics of what, you know, like you had the indication, like, okay, women that are having a conversation?
I don't know if I pulled up the actual test itself.
Because again, it wouldn't have to, it couldn't, I'm assuming it's not just like a black person. It's got to be multiple black people, and they've got to have dialogue that what doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know what the criteria is. It doesn't say that in this particular article.
All right, well, I'll be interested to follow up and see what films do and do not pass the criteria, I guess.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Bad boys, what you gonna do when the search on brown come for you?
So, you know, generally we white people lost our shit with the Formation and Beyonce's Super Bowl performance. Like,
I'm aware of the losing of shit. Yeah, SNL like, even did a whole skit about it.
Yeah, we're not gonna,
Jay Beyonce became black.
It really, we as a group of people just lost our entire shit. But Detroit Police Sergeant, 17-year veteran, is coming under investigation after comparing Beyonce's Super Bowl performance to the KKK. If any of you have been on Twitter, you've seen probably quite a lot of the same for some reason, which I just is a gross conflation. But so you know the image from the Super Bowl where Beyonce's dance troupe are all standing in a formation that makes an X and they're all holding up the one fist in honor of the Black Panther Party and Malcolm X? And so somebody took that image and then photoshopped like Klan robe, like hooded Klansman robes over all the dancers. And said Sergeant put on his Facebook, you know, if this performance, meaning Beyonce's formation, was acceptable this year, then this KKK is good next year for the NFL halftime. And yeah, he's going to get paid, but he's suspended and coming under some fire. And it was actually a colleague, a coworker that reported him. But the whole fucking like Black Panther Party and KKK conflation is just absolutely asinine. I mean, it's just so grotesque. Like, name anyone the Black Panther Party lynched, killed, burned out, fucking destroyed, ruined. You know, just I'm not even get into it. But so many people, so many fucking people. And in fact, there was a person on Twitter that said essentially that white people, we view black power as a means to oppress because that's how we use white power. You know, like we instantly think like, oh, black power is subversive because obviously white power is. That's the intent of white power. So clearly black power must be the same.
Right.
But it's so ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. And that wasn't even the worst Yes All Cops piece. Did you have the piece on the 46 Georgia correctional officers that were charged in a year-long drug trafficking sting.
Yeah, so the 46. FBI arrested 46 current and former correctional officers in a sting at 9 facilities.
Here's 2 pieces of good advice. Number 1, ask Geico.
Around Georgia, the result of a 2-year undercover operation that went down with raids by the FBI at the prisons.
46.
And the indictments revealed a staggering corruption within Georgia Department of Correction institutions. Among those arrested were 5 members of an elite squad aimed at busting up drug dealing in prison.
What? Jeez,
called
Louise.
The Cobra Unit.
You know what it sounds like? It literally sounds like the plot of that fucking, what was the show on fucking FX with fucking the bald-headed dude?
The Shield.
This is literally like straight up like
totally.
Fucking Timothy fucking whatever his name is, and he's got the drugs
and Lem.
Yeah, dude.
The probe found that the prison guards and staff were smuggling contraband such as liquid tobacco and cell phones into the cell box for money. Inmates used the illegal cell phones to commit wire fraud, money laundering, and identity theft. Officers are also charged with using their badges to facilitate drug deals on either side of the prison wall. The trafficking is said to include multiple kilos of cocaine and meth in exchange for thousands of dollars in bribe money. Britt Johnson, special agent in charge of the Atlanta FBI office, told CNN that the contraband cell phones in prison are a tremendous problem. It makes a huge challenge for law enforcement after you chase down and arrest and prosecute criminals and put them away for life, and they continue to direct crime on the streets from their jail cells.
Threaten fucking witnesses. They can do all kinds of shit from jail.
I'm against prison generally, but I just find this interesting. Like, that's how you know what bullshit prison is.
Yeah.
Like, to be totally
not just
totally
how what bullshit prison is,
like how it makes nobody safer whatsoever.
Not at all. Not at all. And then the whole fucking, like, you know, this, again, copaganda where it's just one lone wolf. You know, it's not all – that's what we call the segment, Yes, All Cops. Mm-hmm. You know, this narrative that, like, oh, there's, you know, good cops and there's just the one bad guy that does this thing. Here's 46 motherfuckers and a whole fucking unit. The whole fucking unit. And if you're trying to tell me that it was just these four – like, I mean, all right. It might have been these 46 individuals doing the dirty. 89 fucking other 100 fucking people knew it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no fucking way these 46 operated in a vacuum and nobody fucking knew what they were doing. You know? It's crazy. It's crazy. It's absolutely just unchecked. It's unbelievable. And it doesn't surprise me that a 2-year-long sting would net damn near 50 fucking officers and kilos.
Across the whole state. Like, it's not even isolated to one prison or anything. Like, that's the other thing is that's why the Yes All Cops portion of it. So, yeah, there's that.
Absolutely insanity.
Moving on.
Yeah, where's my new? Oh, yeah.
We got receipts. We got receipts. Yeah.
They got receipts.
We do. And they're on Twitter this week.
The Twitters.
Yeah. So Patrick Claiborne, I guess he's a writer and author. He had the receipts for Sally Jenkins, who's a fellow columnist. Sally Jenkins on February 4th, immediately after the Super Bowl, was among the very many white people that were tisking Cam Newton and said, so like, it'd be a lot easier to admire Cam if he wasn't so relentlessly admiring of his admiral self. The Panthers quarterback's been introduced fully to the global audience on the stage this week, and his impression he has left us. He's brilliant and beautiful, and anyone who doesn't like his bold dancing is joyless prude. He may even be the new super species he claims to be. He also appears to own a new size ego, right? So she's like tearing down fucking Cam. About 4 years ago, I like Lance Armstrong. I've always liked him. Not the fairy tale prince, but the real him. The guy with the scars on his head, visible and invisible. The combative hombre who once crossed the finish line swinging his fist at another rider. The contradictory, salty mouthed, anti-religious non-believer. So, Sally Jenkins.
Sally.
Patrick,
just to be clear, we got one cheating, lying asshole, Lance Armstrong.
She likes him. She likes him.
She likes that dude. She always has. And Cam, whose biggest problem is smiling a lot.
Ego.
This racist shit about Cam just gets under my skin because there's absolutely no merit. There never is merit, but like with him, it's the most ridiculous thing. Like his honest to goodness biggest problem is that he's black. Like
yeah, no, for real, yes, for real,
else,
for real, for real.
Nothing else to point let's just go through all of it. Oh, he's black.
He scores, you hate him.
Yeah.
He wins, you hate him.
He loses,
you hate him.
He doesn't score.
He talks too much and shows his teeth and smiles, you hate him.
He's sullen and upset about losing,
you hate him. It's like, what's the common denominator? I think it's his skin, you know?
Let's get real.
Claiborne, a news anchor for the NFL Network, thank you for coming up with the receipts.
Thanks for that, Patrick. Appreciate it.
And we have another one, Antisocial Socialite, whose Twitter handle is Fuck in Queer. Thank you for that receipt. Owen Benjamin. So you might have seen
this. This fucked her.
Yeah. If you follow like Rodimus Prime or the Blackout Tips or a few other folks, boy, he was getting dragged through Black Twitter because he's a fucking.
Apparently he has a podcast.
Oh, fuck this
that he
guy,
talked man. All about it on. I refuse to listen
and then
to
he,
it.
He had a bunch of tweets even like.
Other
so
people did.
He did a bunch of dumb stuff, but he did the same Beyonce, KKK, blah, blah, skibbity boo boo. And he called her a cunt. He threw out the C word and then tried to say he didn't do it. I didn't do it. Never did it.
I never did
and,
that.
And Antisocial Socialite was like,
screen cap?
She got that screen cap the year the clap black, year the receipts. Screen capped his own goddamn fucking tweet. Support cops, criticize the system. Cops don't make this toxic wage inequality. Billionaire cunts like Beyonce and Jay-Z do, however. Oh, really? I wonder.
Really?
Really?
Hmm.
But he was, he fucking was saying all kinds of stupid ass shit and then like trying to fucking like. Into like the whole race baiters and it wasn't him and he went like super left and fucking total like fucking like racist asshole and fucking full on like the whole time. I don't think he's on TV anymore, but if he was like I think Rod was trying to get him off of a show that got canceled a year ago, but like fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Fuck him 20 ways from
Sunday.
We got
your goddamn receipts too, asshole.
Yeah, I never nice. Did that.
I never did that. Oh wait, I did do that.
Bloop.
Girl, please.
And now,
who's your girl, please, this week?
Girl, please.
Meryl motherfucking Streep.
Now, let me just remind me. Isn't she the Rebel Slave T-shirt girl? Isn't that her?
She is.
That's what I'm saying. Okay,
so I'd rather be a rebel than a slave.
She shouldn't be new to this kind of. You know what I'm saying? Like, you'd think somebody that had already like stepped in poop would be like, you know,
it took Jen Mew now
cognizant of not stepping in poop again.
You would think that.
You'd hope.
You'd be wrong.
This is some. So what? Let's hear it. What'd she do?
So at the Berlin Film Festival, some questions came up regarding diversity, which is turned into a new, you know, kind of buzzword of sorts. I think I have a little report here. We can
play. Yeah, shout out to Raina April. I think that's because of Oscar's So White.
Yeah, of course.
This conversation in Hollywood specifically.
Yeah, so this is a panel at the Berlin Film Festival, including
I don't know
juror.
Very much about, honestly, about the Middle East. And yet I've played a lot of different people from a lot.
When did she become British? Did I miss that? She going full Madonna? What's going on here?
Yeah. A lot of different cultures. And the thing that I notice is that we're all, I mean, there is a core of humanity that travels right through every culture. And after all, we're all from Africa originally.
Oh, stop it. She went Raven Simone and shit. What is Berliners, she doing?
We're all Africans, really.
No.
So,
no, we're not.
I think we... Look, we have a critic on our jury, we have a director on our jury, we have actors on our jury, we have a photographer, cinematographer. People will be looking at different things.
It's diverse, y'all. Look,
but they're all
diverse.
White people, so
I just,
now she thinks diversity means an occupation?
The diversity of whiteness.
I just, okay, go ahead, Merle, let me let you finish.
We're human beings.
We're human beings, y'all.
And film is an emotional experience. So it's a way that... we're going to make these decisions based on what our head wants to say, but we're first attacked in the heart. So that's an interesting process. I'm so looking forward to it.
That was gobbledygook at the end. She that was like a bad skit. She didn't know how to end. What about her head and her heart?
Mm-hmm.
What?
She says the jury is evidence that at least... women are included, and
it
in
took
fact,
Jen U. Nelson years to master the vision of directing.
Oh my God!
But
that
Jesus,
women are included, and in fact dominate the jury, and that's an unusual situation in bodies of people who make
decisions. So diverse.
Solidarity is for white women.
I'll just say this honestly.
Solidarity is for white women.
It's a form of all lives. It's a form of human. You know, we're all human first. We all bleed red on the inside. Love will conquer all. And I'm not saying Meryl's doing this specifically, but I find often, very frequently, the individuals that aggressively espouse that opinion. They're like, you know, like, I just think this whole, race is a social construct and this whole black-white thing is divisive. Can't we all get along and we're all the human race and love will conquer all? We just don't need to be divisive. Like, I frequently find that approach to be a convenient means for a white individual to not do anything, to be very inactive when it came to deconstructing systems of supremacy. Like, ooh, I benefit from the system inherently, and it's really built for me and me and me, and I can maintain the status quo, and I can just kind of turn a blind eye, and I can kind of rally against some of the bad stuff, but by saying, humans first, we're all the human race, yay.
So all you need is love.
Yeah, I'm not saying Meryl's doing that specifically.
Man, fuck Meryl Streep. Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. Because every time these white feminists are given an opportunity, I call it an opportunity to actually show solidarity with women of color and people of color, at every goddamn turn, they make it about themselves and some whacked out notion that as long as they are closer to white, male, heteronormative patriarchy, that's better for everybody. And that is bullshit. Yes. It's just full on bullshit. So I pulled up, thank you, The Root and Shamira Ibrahim, who wrote this piece, which is six things that are as African as Meryl Streep.
Okay.
Number one, Jamie Oliver's Jollof rice recipe. Jollof rice is a West African one pot staple. Simply stated, it's a kind of big fucking deal to the point that it's the subject of regular debates on Twitter, but who makes the best? Schneier says it's the Senegalese one. Paired with plantain is one of the purest expressions of love that exists within the diaspora, which is why when British chef Jamie Oliver turned the following crowning glory into an abomination, I damn near ate my foot. I've spent the better part of my days trying to figure out what's going on here, but I've come up with answers. Less answers than sway. All of these additional herbs and spices, pieces of tomato instead of actually cooking it down in blended tomatoes and oil. No one asked for this.
How, sway?
How? Don't disrespect my taste buds. Number two, vacation cornrows with beads on them. Just as African as Meryl Streep.
Honestly, there's like every time we fly out of Philadelphia to Jamaica, every fucking time, someone's coming back on that plane with the fucking, you know, like
giraffe.
The Bo Derek fucking dreads. Sunburn in between.
Yeah. And a carved giraffe.
Bright,
you know,
bright fucking red peeling cornrows.
The famous Bo Jamaican giraffe. Yeah. Scented oils. If you've ever been 125th Street in Harlem before 2007, you're guaranteed to have a detailed story of personal interaction with one of the plethora of African scented oil vendors. I've not seen white people go out of their way to purchase these and take in their authenticity. I'm not sorry to have been the one to break it to you, but African Black Love, Blue Nile, and Ebony Musk were more than likely made in a basement in Philadelphia. Number four, most African dance classes. I've been dancing in a variety of capacities and companies from the majority of my brown skin life, and I can count on one hand the number of introduction to West African dance seminars that didn't involve exaggerated pelvic movements and jump circles and high energy jumps. Few things are more off-putting than a lily white instructor telling you how this is how your people traditionally move.
Listen. There's the fucking dance, like what is that thing online? What's that product called?
Daily Burn.
Yeah. And it's actually this unsolicited like promo for Daily Burn. It's like $10 a month, and it's like it's got all these different free videos and different exercises, and you can do like level one,
there's
level
dancing,
two.
There's dancing. There's strata.
There's like step yoga, and all kinds all of, sorts shit. Of stuff. So they have an African dance, right. And it's got a black woman and I think two other black women and a white dude, and they're in the studio, and I had to actually see this to believe it, because I didn't believe it. But so they're going through, and the woman who's leading the instruction says something about, like, you know, she's talking through this like part of the dance, I don't know if it's a warm up or something, about being like, you know, in the jungle, and saying like, you know, I see this, I see that. The white dude turns and says, I see Simba. And her face.
And the Tierra Lachey is her name. She looks over and she's like,
without fail, like, gave a side eye to the camera, like, what?
So bad. Okay, so number five is any artwork that was commissioned by Rachel Dolezal. Just as African as Meryl Streep. Number
she
six.
Commissioned artwork?
Oh, yeah, stop.
Dolezal's. Mm-hmm. I did not know she commissioned artwork.
I think she's still running a natural hair shop out of her house, so there's that too. Oh. Number six, braids by Rachel. Number six, Will Smith's accent in Concussion.
You haven't heard it, but people have been saying,
tell the truth. Tell the truth. People tell the truth. Really, okay, anyways. So those are six things that are just as African as you, Meryl. And they're not African at all. So you should shut your fucking mouth talking shit. You can hit the girl, please.
She's from all the continents in Africa.
All of them.
Yeah, please.
Mm-mm. Wow.
This is a good segue.
Just wow. Meryl Streep, really?
Mm-mm. Boo.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey.
White people.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know this, which is interesting, because you and I both worked in the restaurant industry for quite some time. But mm-hmm. The somewhat strange, and some people think odd, American system of tipping servers at restaurants is apparently grown out of racism. So in the U.S., restaurant servers work under a very different pay system than most people. Beyond a small hourly rate, their employees don't pay their wages. Customers do. Essentially, workers have dozens of different bosses each day that individually decide how they should be compensated. And there's not even a requirement beyond social mores that these de facto bosses pay anything at all.
Mm.
You know, because you could skip out. For years, Sayuri Jeremiah, co-founder and director of Restaurant Opportunity Center United and director of the Food Labor Research Center at the University of California, Berkeley, has advocated and organized to end this system, but it wasn't until she started researching her new book, Forked, A New Standard for American Dining, that she discovered that the separate lower minimum wage for a tipped employee comes from a dark part of American history, slavery.
Mm.
Original workers that were not paid anything by their employers were newly freed slaves. The whole concept of not paying them anything and letting them live on tips carried over from slavery. I had no idea.
Many Americans in post-slavery America initially resisted tipping, a custom that originated in European aristocrats. The tip was patronizing. It was seen as despicable, undemocratic, and wholly un-American. But the idea that anyone who accepted tips was in a lower class held on into the early 20th century.
True.
She notes an American reporter, John Speed, who reflected on the tipping system in 1902 while traveling to the North for the first time. His words underscore the inherent racism to tipping. Quote, I've never known any but Negro servants. Negroes takes tips, of course. One expects that of them. It's their token of inferiority. But to give money to a white man was embarrassing to me.
Huh. So even then, the tipping was like, he was like very accustomed, like, oh, well, these black people are beneath me,
yeah,
and they're not.
How else
are
they going to eat?
How else they going to get anything? Yeah, here's a penny for you or whatever. But a white person, I'm embarrassed for the white person.
Yeah.
Because that to him, the tipped class was so stridently associated with black people that a white person being a part of that group just didn't sit with his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Very interesting.
So we have some music stuff we wanted to go to. So I wanted to talk about that. I know that you had the Tefpo piece to to play or whatever. I don't know. I know nothing about it, so I'm interested too.
So I'll just play it. Tef Poe is a
this is in response to Macklemore's White Privilege 2.
We talked about maybe a couple of podcasts ago.
Yeah, two episodes ago, I think. I wanna fly. Yeah. Can you take me 52 far weeks. Away? Give me a star to reach for. Tell me what it takes, and I'll go so high. Broadcasting live from Suburban Pro Studios. Won't touch the ground. South side of St. Louis. My wings and pull the strings. I want these dreams that all fall down. My mother told me I could never care to cast judgment. So foolishly, I see most of these rappers lack substance. The crossroads, many of us stand, you see us fall. If I was you, I probably wouldn't need to be involved. Or see it in the middle of the street, you see us all. We do not share the same luxuries as y'all. So for me, it is a gamble if I even do this. Fuck around and leave my career in ruins. Wish I could speak my mind and keep it real about your privilege. But I cannot because America don't like niggas. Ronald Reagan drug laws still indicting niggas. And every rapper spitting lies about Ferguson. But only few of us was there when niggas started burning shit. Patriarchy, misogyny, these niggas ain't heard of it. But let the police touch my mama, these niggas gon' murder shit. Black president, but he truthfully hate niggas. Stephen Colbert don't give a fuck about racism. I'm P.O.E., I swear to God, I hate Twitter. It's overflowing with maniacs and fake niggas. This do not belong to me. Your privilege ain't a song to me. Through mass incarceration, they eliminate the struggle. On the day, your privilege is not a song to me. It's powerful, and I think it's really worth listening to. Really, and the title's Message to Macklemore, a.k.a. 52 Weeks. But he says a lot of the stuff that we talked about. That, you know, like, straight up, this is not a joke to him. He can't fuck. He can't even speak. You know, his career would be much different, right? The, you know, at a minimum for Macklemore, it was like, oh, you get a whole bunch of praise cookies for, you know, saying some simple-ass shit. Yeah. That's great. I will put the link in the notes, obviously.
Yeah, he's been in St. Louis from day one.
Yeah, Tef's awesome. I got to meet him at the convening. I think two other places too besides that, but I got to actually talk with him at the convening. He's intense but amazing, so he's really cool. So I apparently there's a reggae dancehall remix of Formation that I didn't know I needed, but apparently I do.
Okay.
So I thought that would be cool to just check.
Let's
out.
Do it.
See what the deal is with it. Here we go.
What happened at the New Orleans?
Rude Gal remix.
Rude Gal.
How popular the man.
That's not me, y'all. That's not me.
This year for the good up gal them with the pepper sauce in a them bag. This year for the gal them that kept them man to go on that cross.
Golden cross.
This year for the people. No bother with Babylon. Me like my baby hair, with baby hairs and afros. Me like my Negro nose and shabba rock nostrils. Ting-a-ling, the linga we are swing. Beyonce, I sing, they boom, 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 in. All the Caribbean girls in. And the American girls in. We are 12 and I'm haters. I'm 12 and I'm haters. You never know, say we are 12 and I'm haters. I'm 12 and I'm haters. I'm 12 and I'm haters. You never know, say we are 12 and I'm haters. Yo, Miss Carter, tell them again, yo. Miss Carter, tell them again. Me gone.
She's holding up like coconut milk, tamarind balls. That's hilarious. All right, so that was cute. That was cute.
It was, I could tell that was Jamaican dance hall. It was in the red. A lot of bass.
What did you have? Well, you had some other stuff that came up in the internet.
Yeah, so this is, this really just made me laugh. Oh, wait, why is it on mute?
Hey, so we started from the bottom, now we're here, girl.
I love this.
This is my butt right here.
La biggest gift.
So That is finally Aaron.
Finally, Aaron. Yeah, now, there was a shorter clip of it that was out. It was like only 30 seconds because it was on Twitter or whatever. And he had been saying he was going to put the full video out.
Oh, so
and,
did he?
And then, yeah, this was the full video.
So this is 30 seconds, though. This is the full
this
video?
This is more than 30 seconds.
That was exactly 30 seconds really? On Twitter. Yeah.
Well, I think the other one was shorter then.
Okay.
Maybe it was only 16 seconds or something.
And I fucking love it, though.
And he said, this is the whole thing. Don't be, because he basically was trying to say, like, It's not that impressive. I know everyone's been asking for it, but it's nothing special. But I think it's pretty goddamn special.
I think like fucking Patty Pies got all the shine from fucking what was his name? James?
No. James, yeah. James Chanel.
They finally got like put together, connected. I think finally Aaron should be fucking like the Golden Girls like DVD box set should have a fucking like finally Aaron like remix, because
right.
That was just fucking fantastic.
So I came across this thing, which is seven rising artists take on Roberta Flack's Killing Me Softly.
Okay.
Which I thought was interesting. So let's see what we can get. So it's Tina Shay, SZA, Dej Loaf, Empress Of, Abra, Laura Nerif, and Jean De cover the Fugees' Killing Me Softly. It's only a minute long, so it's okay.
I'm like going through my songs in my head now, like, which one should I do? Okay, I keep having these dreams about foreign whips and diamond rings. Baby, please just supply me or I'ma leave you in the streets. You can cut the jealousy when I got easy on the beat. You keep claiming that you trap, but it's not easy in these streets. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Strumming my pain with his finger, seeing my life with his words.
I'm only gonna pause it because I think that the internet is sentient, because right now on this video a ad for Daily Burn just came up.
Fuck you. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Fuck you, dude.
I swear.
Shut the fuck up. You're not conspiracy. I gotta come look at it. Fuck you. Fuck you.
I swear.
I don't fucking believe this shit.
Oh, it just went away. Oh, shit. It was right here. I kid you not.
Just screen cap that shit.
Killing me. It was right there. It was an ad for fucking Daily Burn.
Killing me, sorry.
I turned the corner and it disappeared, y'all. I got up from my seat, went over to her computer screen.
Now you calling me a liar?
I'm not saying, I'm saying it disappeared.
Well,
I didn't call you a liar.
It's not my fault it disappeared. It was up there.
Daily Burn, Daily Burn, Daily Burn. Come back on, Daily Burn.
You can tell that she got a lot of pain in her. Try to hide it, but she on her third hangover this week. She didn't really want the fame. It just came with it. Yeah.
That was cute. Anyways, you can check that out. I'll put the links in the notes.
Honestly,
I can't believe
Daily
it.
Burn. That's fucking,
fucking
crazy.
Daily Burn. So we want to do a little fun thing with music, and I thought this would be fun. 15 new Jack Swing joins to get you hype for the week. Since we're recording on a Sunday night, I thought this might get people in the mood when they listen to it tonight or tomorrow.
Okay.
So just to give a little preface, that there ain't nothing like listening to some old school jams before a night out on the town or to get your week together.
Got it.
And what could be better than some new Jack Swing? Popularized in the late 80s, new Jack Swing is a dance style commonly credited to Teddy Riley, who was one third of the hit R&B group Guy. To celebrate the greatness of the dance craze known as New Jack Swing, you'll find 15 New Jack Swing joints to get you moving and grooving the next time you want to get it together. Okay, here we go. Hey to the TikTok, get on
inside, take off your coat, I'll make you feel at home. Now let's pour a glass of wine, cause now we're all alone. I've been waiting for this, so just let me hold you close to me. Cause I've been dying for you, girl, to make love to me. Girl, you make me feel real good. We can do it too, we both wake up.
You know I'm hooked on you. And this is what I do. So, first of all, I love this song. I love Call Me Bad unabashedly because it just reminds me of high school. Few tidbits about Call Me Bad. One is that the dorkier looking white guy in Call Me Bad is married to Myra Gray of American Idol fame.
Really?
Yes. I just noticed that in the video, he's with a black girl in the video, too.
Tamira, dude. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so that's kind of funny.
I had a little crush on Tamira back in the day.
All right, take it down.
She got put out too early. She got sick.
So, and then the other thing is, I love this song because it's a lot, it's very, like, consensual song. Like, the guy, all the lyrics are very, like, I want to do this. And it's a question. It's not like, I'm going to do this. It's like, this is what I want. And this will be cool. And it'll feel good. And it'll be awesome. And I love that about it.
It reminds me, we were this afternoon, Valentine's Day, watching Love Potion number 9. And it's like a 90s, like, kind of crappy, like, Sandra Bullock fucking, like, yes, vehicle definitely. About.
But I love it.
But it had a bunch, like, the dude, like, gets the potion and then goes, like, fucks the shit out of an entire sorority. Like, the whole sorority. Like, yep. Like, that was just, like, totally cool plotline. Like, mm-hmm. He has the power to, like, seduce any woman now, and he's going to go to a sorority. He's a grown man.
Yeah.
And he's going to a college sorority. It was weird. But it was, weird. It was like a music video montage of him, like, banging out sorority girls. Like,
really, dude?
Like,
you grown. Don't do that. You grown. You shouldn't be going into sorority.
Those late 80s, like early 90s screwball comedies were hella problematic.
Very, very problematic. So we move on to number 2 on the list, which is from When Keith Sweat. Yeah. Hey.
I'm here for Keith Sweat.
Now, this is a rapey song, though. This is a very rapey song, though. So he's stalking her. You and I together.
Dreams seem so real. If it's a dream, it seems the way it feels. It feels so real. I know it.
I wanna. Keith. Rapey ass Keith.
He wants to.
He really wants to. We have the originators of the New Jack Swing coming up next. A guy. Mm-mm. I love this song. I love Guy, actually. One of my favorite albums is the Guy album. But actually, I don't like this Guy song. I mean, I like it, but it's not my favorite Guy song. We'll do it better. Oh, yeah. Tonight. gyrating in this video, and I find it really funny because it's like 90s gyrating. Nobody's super in shape. Everybody looks totally normal. I love the 90s. They were so awesome.
Matching, like not totally matching outfits, like, but like color coordinated.
Biking shorts with skirts over on top of them, so you had like some coverage. I just, the 90s were awesome for that reason.
What's the American anyways, look?
These freaking ads. I can't take them anymore. There's too many of them. Then we're going to come to a girl group coming in here. Little known fact, I did a dance to this song in high school. Shout out to Carone, Francine, Catania. We made up the Emma Willard School version of En Vogue in 1992. I was Cindy for the record. Those black dresses they wore in that video. Ooh.
Remember like maybe like girls. 3-4 months ago, I pulled up into the driveway and was rocking En Vogue, and I didn't want to get out of the car, so I let it play for like a couple minutes, and you texted me. You're like, are you fucking sitting in the driveway listening to En Vogue? I'm like, yes.
I heard you, Miss. I'm like, why is somebody playing En Vogue very loudly in my driveway? Who the fuck is that? It was you, of
guilty.
Course.
I'm here for En Vogue, too.
I know. Who isn't? Quite frankly.
The harmonies were undeniable. Uh-oh.
Take it to Philly right quick.
Get down.
Crew anyway, so cute. They had like their little suits and all that on.
They ripped really hard.
Jackets with the ties and the shorts.
Philly
the
style.
Whole like look they had going on. They was cool. Very, very, very cool.
And they're still fucking cool. What's the name on that? What's that cool. acapella TV show?
The Sing Off.
The
right?
Sing Off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what we got next. Take it back to the ladies. Hey, this is your girl Lily Drew. You know you love Lily. That's your girl.
You're only saying that because she had that comment about fucking.
She replied to you. I don't know. She's your girl. When chicks reply to you on Twitter, you go together. You didn't know that? Famous people reply to you, you go together.
Where did you go? You're telling me that you love me.
I love SWV because they were a group that were like, nope, Coco's the one that sings. Don't mind us back here. We'll just do the harmonies. Like, there was no, like, faking. Well,
weren't they put together specifically
Taj
in that way,
or Lily could actually sing really well.
Weren't they put together as a group like
no,
that?
No, no, they weren't put together, but they're still together. Got their own reality show now.
Gonna get us in trouble. We're gonna have to like iTunes is gonna send us a royalties comment.
You think so?
I don't know what the rules are. Y'all are playing music too much music. You're playing too much music for your dozens of peoples. Too many
right,
songs.
We'll only play a couple more. Let's see.
I'm just teasing. I don't know what the deal is.
Let's see. What should we do next? Go a little MJ. He stepped his toe into the well. Longest video ever.
Yeah, they do those intros. He liked them fucking million dollar.
Movie.
Yeah, he do all kinds of shit all the time.
And what is it?
Him and doing? Janet. That was back in the day, though.
Hey, I love this song. It's so pretty. Michael sounds so good on it too. He had all the flowing.
And
locks.
I think was this like was Stevie Wonder doing his production on here somewhere? I can't remember something.
Oh, I don't know about that. I know this video had Magic Johnson, Iman, Eddie Murphy, everybody was up in it.
Had that like new first CGI where he went
into
sand
like,
and shit.
Into
yeah,
sand
yeah.
and shit. Just seemed like heaven, so I did it. And do you remember? Iman was like, I'm for Clint, y'all. He's singing to me. The breakdown of that song is like, do you remember in the park after dark on the street, you and me in Spain? What about? I love that whole part.
Did you break it the hell down?
Yeah, he breaks it down all the way. All right, how about a little Bobby Brown in the Hughes? Maybe not. We gotta wait for this.
What was the genre I said I liked?
I don't know what you like.
That was on BET, BET Soul.
Oh, baby, I don't know what it was. Babe. That's some new stuff you were into.
You will be there every little step I make. We'll be together every little step I take. You will be there every little step I make. We'll be together. I can't sleep at night. I toss and turn, listen.
reason for the telephone. All right, we got one more. We'll do one last one, which I do believe contains probably the most sage advice ever put down.
Never trust a girl. You knew you were going there.
Yeah, Spider-Man and freeze in full effect.
I don't know what people, white or black, don't love this song.
What?
They play this at white weddings. Everyone loves this song.
Girl, I must warn you. I sense something strange in my mind.
Yo.
Situation is serious. Let's kill it because we're running out of time. It's all so beautiful. Relationships, they seem on the start. It's all so deadly when love is not taken from the heart.
Check it out.
It's driving me out of my mind. That's why it's hard for me to find. Can't get it out of my head. Miss her, kiss her, love her. That girl is.
All the 90s dances were so, like, accessible. Everybody could do them.
If I were you, I'd take precaution before I step to meet my girl.
You know,
cause in some motion, your reach is the best thing.
All right.
I'm not done with music, though. Because remember, the writer said the Finnish rapper. So I'm going to play this.
Is this the Finnish rapper?
I'm going to torture us for just a moment.
Or just a Finnish rapper.
This is dedicated to all my true homies.
Oh, no.
But this is the one you said that people were joking on. Yeah. The person that she's speaking of, yeah, this doesn't rap in English. Don't do this to us and the Finnish people, please. I don't want to piss off a whole country.
All right, well, I'll go back.
See if you can find out who the actual, like, Finnish artist is. Maybe
they can ask that. Hannah.
Yeah, write us or tweet us. Send us a link to the artist that your son's listening to. We'd be happy to play it and let you know what we think of it.
I was going
to
play some of the...
And we'll see you soon.
Some of the shit that I like. This is going back a little bit older, but a little four-part harmony stuff.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. From the
studio. God, dude! An ad? this video has like 12,000 views. They're putting an ad in front of it?
They put an ad in front of everything.
Oh, shit.
Everything.
Jesus.
They can't fast forward it. No, of course not.
Ryzen.
This might be the, like, from Poison to this. This is a big leap. What is this?
This is the Golden Gate Quartet from 1950s. They were a four-part harmony. This is called Shadrach.
This sounds like they're just redoing black music.
They're black.
Oh, they are?
One of the more popular black four-part quartets.
Oh, I think you played this for me before.
I love them. You come to Mount Daniel and worship the Abdul Shek, Rak, Min, Shek, Abednego. But the children of Israel would not bow down, Shek, Rak. I like, you know, like vocal four-part harmonies a whole bunch. But then, so I did find the music that I said that I was, I guess it was like BET Soul was the, I think it's a, is it something BET plays on Sundays or something? I don't know what day it was, but you were doing a bunch of work and,
me at the door.
Nobody's wanted her to stay. Ooh, girl, I'm faded, and I can't take it. I wanna have you in the worst way, baby. What am I saying? Misbehaving, defenses failing. I'm falling for your love, Delilah.
So that is the chorus voice. That's Tim Omaji, I guess is how it's pronounced. Delilah featuring Pusha T. Mm-hmm. And I saw that on, I guess it was BD Soul. And then I also saw, this is another song I really liked. No commercial? Oh, sweet, no commercial.
I've been trying to lose you, baby. Getting kinda used to fading.
I like this song.
I guess we both refuse to face it. Ooh. Neither one of us will ever change our stripes. Why are we dancing now that the party's over?
That's Guy Sebastian and a song called Linger with Lupe Fiasco. But I guess, I don't know if this has like a name, this genre, like Frank Ocean style, I guess, or something.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, you're like,
like falsetto. Like, Frank, like, yeah, but yeah, like Frank Ocean's not nearly as much, like both Guy Sebastian and Tim Omaji were more like, almost like EDM, like more
is
dance.
Is it Sebastian Bach? Is that the person you like?
What's Guy, what's Sebastian, Guy Sebastian.
Who's Sebastian Bach?
Sebastian Bach is the lead singer from fucking like some heavy metal band in the 80s, I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
Fucking.
Okay, I don't know.
Warrant or some shit, I can't remember.
There's another guy I saw that I saw a video for, and I was like, oh, Drew would probably like this.
Yeah, but so, if other people have music in that Guy Sebastian, Tim Omaji, I like that. And admittedly, like, my taste in music and your taste in music doesn't always collide. Like, I basically missed the entire, like, like you have a, like, you know, like you could talk about what's a good example, like, oh, you don't have to have read all of Aesop's Fables to know some of the like contextual pieces about it. Like, I might be able to say, oh, that's just sour grapes, and you kind of know what that means. Like, oh, you're complaining because you didn't really get this award and that's sour grapes, but like, you don't have to have read the actual fable about the fucking, I don't know, two animals and the one was trying to get the grapes and they were sour, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But like, so there's like shared kind of like historical context, and I don't have the like black historical music shared like family context. And then all throughout like the 80s and 90s, not in 80s, but late middle 80s into the beginning of the 90s, I didn't listen to like R&B music at all. So I missed a bunch.
Till the dawn, let's mob and gang, get it on. We got this, King says to ourselves.
Who's this?
This is Charlie Puth.
Don't keep your secrets to yourself.
It's called Marvin Gaye.
It's gonna suit your show and tell.
I think he was in a boy band or something.
It reminds me of, who's that other guy I really like that used to be part of a group and now he does his own stuff, and he made that one album where he just did everything in the studio like at the same time live, which was new at the time. He opened up for, shoot, I can't think of it. Oh, wow.
And then this was another one I
saw. Sebastian Bach, the lead singer from Skid Row.
Oh, okay, Skid Row.
I thought that I've been hurt before, but no one's ever left me quite this sore. Your words cut deeper than a knife. Now I need someone to breathe me back to life. Got a feeling that I'm going under.
Shawn Mendes. Anyways, we should probably end the show.
Yeah,
we could just sit here thinking, playing
bit
music
too much
all day.
Music.
That's but that's okay. You can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mac M A C. You can find that dude at Very White Guy. And any last comments for the peoples?
You know, Walking Dead. Just fucking.
Oh, Walking
enjoy.
Dead tonight. It's gonna be good.
I like that on Valentine's Day.
They're gonna be dead.
Walking Dead.
More deadness.
Yeah.
Extra nice. Dead. All right.
Good night, everybody.
High five.